Here we are, and welcome to a very special episode of the Friday Night Movie Podcast, because Lily and I are in person in my office.
New office.
Well, it's my old office, but it's less dangerous, would you say?
I would say it's less, like, you might electrocute. Electrocute.
Lily doesn't speak English enough anymore and forgets all sorts of words.
The amount of bubbly waters that you could encounter near live cables and open sockets in here previously was absolutely a hazard. And now there's a place for things and it's cleaned up and...
And look, we're sitting like many feet away from each other.
It's wild.
But also on microphones.
Talk about a home edit.
This is a serious home edit. If anyone wants some stuff from my closet, just send me a message. Josh just got a box of comic books and a whole bunch of old CDs.
Oh my God. You did say to me as I walked in here, want a blank CD? Needs to burn some mix for someone. And I felt like I was...
You can't find blank CDs anymore.
I was they cost a lot of money. To 1998. It was very special.
And you flew over here. And
I did. And then I drove.
And you caught up on some movies at my request.
I did.
And I've been on a good run. I've seen like three or four movies in a row that I've loved. I saw, and this is not the order I saw them in, but I saw Unfrosted, The Fall Guy, Ricky Stenicki, and Champions. Like all in a row. And that is just high quality. And I'm in the middle of watching Nightcrawler as I continue my gillissance.
Oh, what? You'd never seen it?
No, I'd never seen it. And that guy, I mean, I must have just not been watching the right Jake Gyllenhaal movies because...
What is a wrong Jake Gyllenhaal movie? What
I mean, Spider-Man where he plays Mysterio and...
Oh, I didn't pay
attention. Love and Other Drugs.
Oh, God, shy. There's like two bad Gyllenhaal movies and those are the only ones you saw.
Yeah, but Gyllenhaal is... Anyways... He's terrifying in Nightcrawler.
He's brilliant in that movie.
Yeah, he's great in that movie. So I'm in on the... I'm now like Gyllenhaal and Gosling. Like I'm now...
Oh, Gosling.
Now please. I'm trying to see those guys in whatever. Whatever they want to do, I'm
on
board.
You're all in.
I'm on board for it. I mean, I don't know if they're good people or not. So just...
They don't seem like overtly bad people. And today's... Like with today, with what we're dealing with, I'll take it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so I think both of those guys are awesome, and I'm enjoying them in these action roles. But clearly, they crush it in drama, right? So like these are, I want to say
yes, that's
Matt,
true.
So I love Matt Damon, but when Matt Damon plays Jason Bourne, he's not charming. Jason Bourne is like very stoic. That's the character.
He's like a bit robotic.
There's not, I mean, and he's great in it, but he doesn't have that like Harrison Ford smirk. And to me, Gyllenhaal and Gosling, as much as I love Chris Pratt and as much as I love Van Wilder, because I think they're two of the best action stars we have right now, I don't see them, and maybe I should, I'd love to see them do heavier drama, you know, and see what that's like, but I see them as like action comedy. But Gyllenhaal and Gosling have done these like Oscar-worthy performances, and now I get to see them, doing action comedy, yeah, I really, really love them in.
And I think Matt Damon's a fantastic actor. I think he's
funny in things where he's funny.
Right, he can do the funny, he can do comedy, he can do the smirk. I think Jason Bourne, you know, I don't know if that was the best action hero for him to play.
Well, he was great at it. And it's just right. That's the character he has to play.
I don't think he's using all of his talents in that movie. And I think that what's been fun about Gyllenhaal and Gosling, who at this point have had 20-year careers, like they have been around, we're that old.
Much longer. Gosling's been since he was in, Remember
child,
the Titans.
Right, since he was a child. But, and Gyllenhaal's been around.
Right, wasn't Gosling in Remember the Titans?
He was in Remember the Titans, and he starts singing in the locker room. And Gyllenhaal, obviously, Darnie Darko, we were in high school.
Was he in Mickey Mouse Club?
He was in Mickey Mouse Club with Britney Spears. And so we've gotten you get a chance to see, like, the amount of films that they're, but I've been all in half.
I never paid attention to either of these guys that much.
Half Nelson.
Okay.
That is a phenomenal Gosling.
I'm still not going to watch The Notebook though.
Well, that's kind of like the Bourne whatever. It's like you put Gosling in a role that is just like he's like...
And like The Notebook has like a big reveal in the end, right? Like they're really reveal. Dead or he's no. really Nicolas Cage or
no.
something like really that.
Nicolas Cage. It is a very heart wrenching reveal, but it's a beautiful movie. I really never like that movie. The point is that Half Nelson is a Gosling movie that flies under the radar and he is outstanding. That's the first movie I saw him in besides Remember the Titans. Had you seen that, you would have been on board a long time.
You know what the other first thing I saw for him? That's not a movie I really like very much. It's the one with him and Steve Carell and Emma Stone.
Oh, I like that movie.
I thought that movie was so weird.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah, I wasn't into that.
It's a bit forced. The movie's a bit forced.
But I clearly should have been watching other things. Like, I saw Drive. I was like, oh, my God. That guy's amazing.
He's amazing. Yeah, that movie's also amazing.
And his SNL is maybe one of the best ever. Yeah, his most recent one is so funny with
people. And, like, I mean, obviously, and he, I mean, he's, I mean, Barbie. I don't, like, he's, the, yeah. to me, he's the best part of that movie.
Yeah, Oscar-worthy performance.
So all that to say... All that to say.
So we talked about these two movies. We're not really going to talk about right. these two movies. We're here to talk about Unfrosted and Ricky Stenicki. Yes. Where do you want to start?
I'm going to start with Unfrosted because...
We, by the way, have some premium content coming from Friday Night Movie.
It's wild.
It's Becky and me doing a tasting because we agreed that both of our families would watch Unfrosted together, I love that on the DL, just like the way you're using your cell phone instead of talking to me right now.
I am. I'm not.
I Instacarted.
Just, I'm not.
I Instacarted 8 boxes of different flavored Pop-Tarts to my house while no one was looking, and they showed up just in time to watch. But as the movie
tells you, it's all the same flavor. They just change the color.
Yeah. Well, no. I've tasted the different ones. Anyways,
do they make Unfrosted anymore?
They must exist, but I don't know about that. I don't know about that. That I would never eat an unfrosted Pop-Tart. I'm not a monster.
What's hilarious is that they started unfrosted.
So I won't give it away, but we'll give away our findings, but we tried strawberry milkshake. We tried Apple Jacks flavored, like the cereal.
Oh, my God.
They should have every cereal flavored Pop-Tart. It's a company, Synergy, makes sense. Fruit Loops flavored, they should have that. But no, we did Apple Jacks.
Amazing.
Strawberry milkshake, s'mores, which was like not really an outlier because everyone loves that, you know. And then there was chocolate chip pancake.
Oh, now is it the frosting that changes flavors or the filling?
Both. Frosting. Well, I don't know what changes flavors. No. Again, I don't know how much
food is in this food.
Yeah.
But
Unfrosted, Jerry Seinfeld directed the movie.
Stars
choreography by the great Chloe Arnold, who I got to see perform live with her incredible sister, Maude Arnold. Maude Arnold was in our movie, choreographed our movie.
And is a genuine, wonderful human. Yeah,
the two of them are just the greatest. Anyways, so we have, you know, we got a connection to Unfrosted.
We do. We have like a two degree separation to Unfrosted. So I watched this clip of Stern had Seinfeld on 11 years ago.
Howard Stern.
Yeah, Howard Stern. I mean, there's no other Stern when you say Stern. I mean, Howard Stern had 11 years ago Seinfeld on the show, and he's telling Howard Stern about how he's like obsessed with the start of Pop-Tarts, like how the story came to be. And if he ever made a movie, he thinks he wanted to make the Pop-Tart movie. But he's famously said as well that he's not interested. Like, he made the B movie. He did the voice for the B movie. And then film is not what he was his next thing after Seinfeld. He did his stand-up. He had the comedians riding in cars, right? Like, he has his whole other life. And he wasn't going to go, like, right in to become a movie star. He definitely didn't need to. But I guess this itch is something he had to scratch. 11 years later, he made the Pop-Tart movie.
You know what? I loved this movie. I was dying. I'm obsessed with cereal and the history of cereal.
I went back and watched Seinfeld and I was watching the kitchen, the production design. The amount of cereals in Seinfeld's kitchen, in his apartment, is wild.
I did a whole episode of Finding Favorites with Leah Jones about cereal.
I know. I mean, and Jerry Seinfeld is a breakfast cereal person.
Yeah. So I loved all of the weird trivia in the movie. Then the stuff with Christian Slater playing the head of the milk vod.
Well, the cameos, I mean, that's a separate topic.
No, but the way he built this fictitious world of Pop-Tarts versus whatever Post was making. It's so funny. And the love thing between Jim Gaffigan as the head of Kellogg's
and Marjorie Post.
And Amy Schumer as the head of Marjorie Post. Was so funny. Yeah,
Marjorie. And how these are real people.
They are real people?
Marjorie Post, yeah.
Oh, I didn't. I thought they
Marjorie
were
made. Post was the first female CEO
of
a company. And she founded Mar-a-Lago.
That we heard at the end of the movie. That was cool.
She was real. But the fact that he ran with this concept based on real people, real companies, got permission.
But made it also very heightened and funny. Like, it's not like...
It's both very Barbie-esque. Well, there's something about it that is...
Well, because, it's a satire of advertising and feminism and marketing and nutrition.
Like Barbie, the reason I think that it stands up as being good is because there's a genuine love for the product.
Exactly.
It's not making fun of anybody who played with Barbies, who plays with Barbies,
who eats Pop-Tarts,
who loves breakfast cereals, like America. I don't know. Like, it's just, it really leans in and it's joyful about the thing. Now, of course, he has some really funny, cynical jokes.
Yeah, but those are funny, cynical jokes about the flavors, about the way food is made, about the science. Yeah, sugar. That's great. We're not going to put sugar in it. It's high fructose corn syrup. Right. That was amazing.
Being in the 60s,
there's a lot of movies that came out about the creation of products. There was the Nike one, which I had no interest in watching.
It was good. Talk about Matt Damon.
Sure. Yeah, right. And those guys are great together. There was the Nike one. I just haven't been that interested.
There's a lot.
The BlackBerry one. There's the Cheetos one.
There's the Uber one.
I haven't seen any of them. But this one, which I didn't know was going to be silly, I thought it was just going to be him telling the story.
No, it's wild.
It really landed for me. Great.
I mean, and also, can we say that, if you're going to, quite like Barbie, if you're going to make, but even more so, this is even bigger than Barbie, if you're, in the terms of cameos, if you're going to make, you're Jerry Seinfeld and you're finally going to make the thing that you're going to make, everybody wants to be in it.
I guess so.
And you get a call, everyone. I did get a bit of hyperventilating thinking about scheduling that movie. They had to block days off or whatever, because Jon Hamm worked one day, obviously. He wasn't working the entire month or whatever they shot that. And so it was a bit nerve-wracking because the amount of people in that movie, but it looks like everybody's so dying to be there.
Absolutely.
All the comedians.
Alex Adelman. I posted about it and he reposted. That was the one thing I posted about the movie because he plays Applejack, I love Applejacks.
And Hugh Grant is fantastic.
Oh my God, Hugh Grant. He is a very funny role.
And then McCarthy is just, you're Seinfeld and you get to pick your top 10. Okay, obviously Amy Poehler, Kristen Wiig, Will Ferrell, there's so many, Tina Fey, there's so many more people you could have in that movie, but, he probably was who's available? I don't know how he went about casting this movie, but it's just the funniest people around.
What's interesting, though, because my kids watching it said, I bet there'll be lots of Seinfeld people in this, and other than Patrick Warburton, who plays Putty in Seinfeld, there was not really.
Oh, you're right.
There was no Julia Louis-Dreyfus or Larry David.
Or Jason Alexander. I didn't even notice.
And
because you know what, I because of Comedians Riding in Cars, which I've seen all the seasons, and I love that show, and I've watched his stand up since. It's not like when I see Jennifer Aniston, I expect her to be with all the friends, R.I.P. Chandler. But do you know what I mean? I don't see anybody from the cast and expect to see the other friends anymore. You know what I mean? For me, Seinfeld is so far removed now from the show in terms of the years that have gone by. I don't need to see. I'm not waiting for.
And it's nice to see him with other people. And I thought he was very good in it. He's doing his thing.
He's not really a trained actor. I mean, he was on a show for a million years.
He was on a show, but
he was playing himself. Here, he did a great job playing.
And he looked great.
Cabana.
I got to say, he looked great, too.
He looked fantastic. He looked,
And he doesn't need to make another movie ever, right?
I don't know. And he did a great job acting.
Yeah.
In that film.
Yeah, it was really fun. The musical scene at the end, the choreography, again, from Chloe Arnold. What a great cherry on top. And this I really identify with. You're going to make your movie. We're going to have an end credit scene. And there's going to be a dance montage. And you got all those cards they got to fill anyway, right?
Right. And I think that, like, you can tell that the point of the movie was joy. It was just making something for people to feel good. And that's okay.
And it was really fun. Okay. Yeah. Let's segue to Ricky.
Your other recommendation of me this week.
Yeah, because Ricky Snicky was
anybody directed, but you and now me have heard of this film.
I don't know. But it's a Farrelly brother. One of the Farrelly brothers. One Farrelly brother directed Champions, which I recommended. And the other Farrelly brother did Ricky Stenicki. Oh, the one who won the Oscar did Ricky Stenicki. The one who won the Oscar for Green Room. Peter?
Peter? Yes.
Peter?
That's Peter.
Yeah. And so I just was like, John Cena, I pretty much love John Cena and everything he does. And in the whole conversation, it's an artifact.
2004. It's like I just came
2024.
Out.
2004.
Sorry, 2024.
So John Cena doing.
It's Peter Farrelly, yeah.
Yeah. John Cena doing comedy is something that I fully support. Because John Cena, and this is, again, an artificial question of John Cena versus The Rock, but like as two wrestlers who became famous actor, with an asterisk, of course, because eventually we'll be talking all about MJF.
Yeah.
But Cena is willing to take supporting roles in a way that The Rock won't anymore.
Right, and that's for sure.
And like, I don't know the inner workings of Shazam, what was that, Black Adam?
Black Adam.
But if you look at the fact, and you hear all the stories about Fast and the Furious, I guess he's technically a supporting role in those movies, but if you hear all this stuff about him and his screen time and all this stuff, and
he can't lose a fight, right?
And like all this stuff with his characters, like Cena is willing to play the goofy fourth lead in the movie on a regular basis.
Well, look really bad.
Right. But then he's also the lead in Peacemaker, which he is
a huge
fabulous.
Star. Yeah.
Fabulous.
He seems less precious from where we stand. And that's always appreciated by comedy lovers, like that he's willing to.
And if you look back to Trainwreck, right? Doesn't he play the boyfriend in Trainwreck at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah,
right. That was the first time I ever. That was the second time I ever saw him in a movie.
The first time a lot of people saw him out of the ring.
Yeah. Or I saw him in that other movie he did. It's just like by the numbers action movie. But like, to me, his comedy range, but also his physical prowess is just like really, really good. Anyways, Ricky Stenicki, which is playing on Amazon Prime, so it's free to stream. I'm watching this movie and I'm like, this is pretty funny. And I'm like,
Farrellys are amazing at comedy.
Right. And I'm like, this is pretty funny. And it's got some heart. And it's got like amazing Jewish content.
And Zac Efron.
Zac Efron. And then the Jewish stuff in it, which is, this whole thing is about them hiring someone to play one of their friends at one of the guys'
places. The concept is great.
And Jeff Ross plays the rabbi, and he's a funny rabbi, but he's not like a gross, crappy rabbi, which is often the character.
And when he, not to spoil it, but when he is unable to perform his duties, it's not because it's not because of him. It's something
that's done to him.
It's not his fault. And so he's portrayed as like a bit of an annoying character, but not, you know, offensive.
Yeah. He's not offensive. And I thought the details and the things that they put in the bris.
Farrelly's not Jewish.
No, but you don't need to be Jewish to play someone Jewish. You don't need to be Jewish to make a Jewish thing. Obviously, we feel strongly that Jews should make this stuff. But he
did a great job representing the bris without being offensive.
The authenticity of that whole bris thing. And also the mothers, right? They were tough, but they weren't assholes.
Right. No, it was. And even the
bris
mom
scene
of the
is
baby,
amazing.
The bris scene is, yeah. Like, I said to Shia, I was like, I said to you, I don't know why I'm talking about.
You could have done the whole movie at the bris.
You could have ended the bris at the bris. Like, you turned it off at the bris because it was so good. But then the second half is really fun.
The second half becomes like a workplace. What's a movie? Almost like Working Girl, it reminds me of.
Not Tootsie, obviously, but like a sort of a madcap, like.
Yeah.
Farce within a workplace.
Yeah, within a workplace.
It's almost like two movies.
Yeah. And then William H. But in that sense, it's divided really well. William H. Macy
is in it,
also
which
is in it.
Amazing.
And he's so funny in it.
Mm-hmm.
As the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as a jerk, but like everything about it, and this is something that the Farrelly brothers, I think, less so, like something about Mary is a movie that I don't really love.
Uh-huh.
I know that's the one they're most famous for,
mm-hmm.
But I've always loved Me, Myself, and Irene a lot more. And the reason why I love Me, Myself, and Irene a lot more is the relationship between the father and the sons and how sweet the relationship between Jim Carrey's character is and the three boys that he raises that aren't his biological sons. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And there's a sweetness in that movie. And I think Stuck on You, which is one of their most underrated movies. Yeah, I love that movie. Has tremendous sweetness in it. And this movie has a lot of sweetness, but also it has like a circumcision gone wrong joke.
Yeah.
Wait, how was that watching for you?
It was fun.
Okay.
It was fun.
Did it help heal your experience?
Yeah, it made me feel like, my kids are fine.
Yeah, you're cool. The kid was fine in the movie too. The
kid was fine in the movie too. But I was like, brises are stressful.
But they also didn't like demonize the bris. Like it was not like a debate as to whether or not to have it.
It's just like obvious that this was part of the family's ritual.
And Stanicky, who has to go in and perform the bris, this should be encouraging people to see this. I felt like he gives a certain, it's like you're on edge, but he has some reverence for the whole thing. And I give credit to Cena. He was great in this movie.
Great, yeah.
So that to me, that was total found money.
It was
worth seeing. Okay, Lil. Well, we're doing a short episode this week. We've got a lot happening in the family world.
Very busy.
Becky's busy this week. We'll be back to a more normal schedule soon. Do you have any other recs? I just really made this show about my four big recs.
I love that. I have a rec, but it's depressing, but it's so good.
What is it?
So The Boy Who Lived.
That's a Harry Potter thing?
I know, and I'm not Harry Potter at all, but it's The Boy Who Lived is HBO. It's Daniel Radcliffe, executive produced a documentary about his stunt double in the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, I've heard about this. I hear it's amazing.
It's amazing. Oh my God. Wow. It's beautifully done. It's, if you're a Harry Potter fan, it's absolutely like an absolute necessity to watch. I'm not a fan, and I thought it was riveting.
That's amazing. So, okay.
That's HBO.
Now, if you want something absurd, I want to give a shout out to Tony Dobbish, one of the great local podcasts.
You already talked about it.
Did I mention this? Hundreds of Beavers?
You've mentioned this on the podcast.
We're going to watch a few minutes of it after this.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, okay. Just a
few.
Gotta
run. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Friday Night Movie, the sibling rivalry and pop culture podcast. Join the Friday Night Movie family by following @FryNightMovie on all of the socials and visiting our website, FryNightMovie.com. Our theme song is by What Does It Eat? And make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.